Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning and welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there anywhere in the world, although I think the website is down at the minute, but you can pick up the podcast for this show later and listen at your leisure. You've got Julian Paul here live as usual. Later we'll have RPG on the line. I think he's going to be talking about computers. Maybe. And also our guest speaker this week, and indeed every second Saturday of the month, is Dr. Ogo Osamo. He'll be talking about a Carbon Brief report where they did some analysis. UK's electricity was the cleanest ever in 2024. All interesting stuff. Loads more coming up. All being well, should I say as well. Next week, and indeed every third Saturday of the month, our guest speaker will be Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. Worth reminding people that they've got an open photography competition running at the moment. Check them out at sheffieldphotosociety.org.uk or their Facebook page, Sheffield Photographic Society, and get your entries in. It's free and you can win some money if you get picked, right. I think. All good stuff. And next up, another reminder, if you tuned in last week, you would have heard Phil Muffett from the Mexican Swinton Astronomical Society talking about all things in the sky. And tonight, there's a special event.
Yeah, it's Planets in the Park tonight between 6:30 and 9 p.m. So, free event with no booking required. You can attend without a ticket.
Wow.
So get yourself along and explore the cosmos with experts and enthusiasts. Friends of Clifton Park Rotherham, along with Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society, invite you to Planets in the Park in conjunction with National Astronomy Week. The evening will be spent looking at the moon high in the sky with Jupiter and Mars, all sitting in splendour above the magnificent constellation of Orion. So why not go along and view the night sky as never before, suitable for all ages? Presentations and displays will complement the observing of the night sky. And if you have a telescope or binoculars and require advice, please bring it or them along. And MSAS members will only be happy to help. Please wrap up warm for the evening. Refreshments will be available for a small charge. National Astronomy Week 2025 runs from the 1st to the 9th of February and is supported by the Royal Astronomical Society, British Astronomical Association, Federation of Astronomical Societies and Society for Popular Astronomy. Phew. And they've got a neat plan if it is cloudy tonight.
Don't worry, because they do presentations and things like that and go along. It's really, really popular. And to be fair, Clifton Park's a fantastic park anyway. And if you want to know more about Mexford and Swinton Astronomical Society, check out their website, which is phenomenal, msas.org.uk. They're also on Facebook and Twitter. Some fantastic stuff.
Because they were saying that this week and quite well...
Should be clear skies.
I've got everything up there at the moment.
If you want to get interested in astronomy, Phil was saying last week that now is the time. All the planets are showing off, if you like, so there's plenty to see. Next up was a really interesting article I saw a while back in the press, and it's about the health benefits of saunas. So saunas have a variety of health benefits thanks to their dry heat and how it affects our bodies. So Dr. Mark Harper is a consultant anaesthetist at Sussex University Hospitals and the author of a book called Chill, The Cold Water Swim Cure. He says saunas are a safe and relatively gentle way to obtain moderate heat stress that will benefit our health. Whereas excessive heat exposure can be damaging to the body and result in hyperthermia, in a similar way to excessive cold exposure causing hypothermia, moderate amounts of cold or heat stress can be beneficial, he says, both producing a mild stress response, activating the sympathetic nervous system, anti-inflammatory and cardiovascular mechanisms, and prompting feelings of relaxation with the release of stress-relieving and feel-good hormones. Sounds good. Now, according to a review in Experimental Gerontology Journal, with regular sauna bathing, the body acclimatizes to moderate heat stress due to a biological phenomenon known as hormesis that triggers a vast array of protective mechanisms, helping to repair cell damage and protect against exposure to subsequent stresses. Now, frequent sauna use may offer a means to forestall the effects of aging and extend health span, and that's what the authors of that paper have concluded. But a study of midlifers in Finland by researchers at the University of Jyväskylä, that's a difficult one to pronounce, published in Mayo Clinic Proceedings, showed that over time, the short bouts of heat stress from a sauna will improve blood flow and strengthen the cardiovascular system, while a review by Dr. Sita Nutsaw at the University of Bristol in Medical Principles and Practice Journal showed sauna use can help to reduce stress and anxiety of everyday life. In 2020, a paper in Preventative Medicine Reports found that people who visited a sauna 9 to 12 times a month had a 53% lower risk of being diagnosed with dementia over the next two decades than people who didn't use a sauna, which is rather an interesting bit of information. Researchers suspect the benefits came from the saunas helping to lower inflammation levels in the body, a known risk factor for cognitive decline. Now, saunas might even help you to look younger. A study conducted at Friedrich Schiller University in Germany and published in the journal Dermatology showed that regular 15-minute saunas improved skin hydration, reduced forehead oiliness, and helped to maintain optimal pH balance of the skin, strengthening its defensive barrier. Perhaps the most welcome news is that people who use saunas are happier and have better energy levels than those who don't use them, according to a recent study in the International Journal of Circumpolar Health. Those who used a sauna at least once a month were found to be happier, sleep better, and have more energy than those who didn't use saunas. So there you go, the health benefits of saunas.
On the hunter and the fisherman.
Sweats by Tool. We played that, talked about the health benefits of saunas. Check out the book Chill, The Cold Water Swim Cure by Mark Hart, Dr. Mark Harper. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every week, 11 until 12. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
On this rather, well, overcast morning. How disappointing.
Well, we're in a weather trough, aren't we, I think?
Well, we're in all sorts of weather things, aren't we? If it's not freezing cold, it's snowing and raining and never mind. Yeah, what do we expect from February? So what's caught your eye in the science news this week, then?
Well, I had a quick look see what the University of Sheffield are involved in, and one of the things I found interesting, I spotted Chris Hoy, the cyclist, talking about his cancer discovery that he's got terminal.
So. Yeah, I mean, that was a shocker, wasn't
and,
it, that?
You know, somebody at the height of that sort of career and pinnacle of success. It just proves that a lot of people are at risk. So I thought it was interesting that University of Sheffield are developing a new clinical trial led by experts at the university and funded by Yorkshire Cancer Research into prostate cancer. So helps to find the cancer at the earliest possible stage before symptoms develop even. And it's got the power to significantly improve survival. So this trial is going to involve 4,500 people in Sheffield and Leeds and maybe expanded out into other parts of the region. But every year in Yorkshire, more than 4,000 men are told they have prostate cancer. And of those, more than half are diagnosed at a later stage when there are fewer treatment options and side effects from that treatment can be much worse. So, interesting thing, it's called the IMPROVE, IMPROVE, clinical trial. And screening helps to find cancer at the earliest possible stage But also one of the things is to weed out an early sort of diagnosis that is a bit too pessimistic. So it's going to be in partnership with Queen Mary University in London, and they're going to investigate whether a program that combines the prostate-specific antigen blood tests, PSA tests, with magnetic resonance imaging scans could save lives, and if so, how it can be organised through a healthcare plan. So James Cato is the Professor of Urology at the University of Sheffield and an honorary consultant at Sheffield Teaching Hospitals. And there's Peter Sassini, CBE, Professor of Cancer Epidemiology and Director of Cancer Prevention at Queen Mary University of London. So interesting work, I think, at University of Sheffield. And another thing which might be of interest to Ogo, who's going to be coming on shortly, I guess, and something we talked about before. The university did a lot of work on trying to develop carbon capture by putting crushed basalt rock onto agricultural land. And they've developed that into basically, they call it enhanced weathering. And by putting the crushed rock on, helps to drive carbon dioxide removal. And it looks like if America would adopt that principle, it could help them achieve their net zero emissions, supposedly by 2050. So a lot of it, they think it costs about $150 an acre, depending on how far you are from the source of the crushed basalt, and that's a silicate rock. It's a development, actually, of the work that's been going on around the world to set up this kind of carbon capture and present a system where it's applicable. But it's got, I think, initial estimates of removing 150 million tons of carbon dioxide, but that's going to be double or treble as the thing develops. So interesting, I think, in terms of a bit of ground rock can make a difference and set us up with carbon capture.
Every little helps, Paul.
Well, I think it's got to be, isn't it? And I think that one of the other things that is happening, I don't know if you've seen the news recently about a Chinese artificial intelligence program called DeepSeek, and it's supposed to be the Chinese version of the ChatGPT. So artificial intelligence is sort of being pushed forward all over the world, and I think a lot of people see it as a sheer cliff. You look at artificial intelligence and it's really hard to grapple your way into it if you're not in that environment already. So the danger is thinking that it's this sort of remote entity that will create things that happen and impact on your life, but do it in a way that you don't really understand. another bit of research that's happened at the University of Sheffield is a new artificial intelligence guidance to help businesses and government to use artificial intelligence technology, developed by researchers at the university and published in a paper at the Royal Society of Open Science by Dr. Dennis Newman Griffiths from the University Centre for Machine Intelligence, outlines the key things that organisations should consider before working with the technology. At the moment, it's kind of accessible. You can get into these programs and play around with them. But it's a set of generative AI tools like ChatGPT, seeing consumer use. And if you have a look now, there's things like Copilot on new computers, where you can ask an artificial intelligence to assist you with different tasks. And if you think you're that remote from it, if you go to Google it, guess what? You're going to be using artificial intelligence.
Well, I've noticed ever recently when I've searched just like through my browser, you get, on top of everything else, you used to always get Wikipedia, didn't you? Now you get an AI summary.
Yes. It's, I think, you know, it's being pushed into use. But it's worth sort of considering. I think it's a great paper. And I say, if you go to Sheffield University, sheffield.ac.uk, and look at news, you'll find the new AI guidance. It was published on the 3rd of February. And it sort of starts to break it down. And it's a complex issue, but it's really a framework so that you can see how you can apply AI within a work environment and in producing a real-term use for it. So the Sheffield framework is called AI Thinking, and it breaks down the process of using artificial intelligence into five skills of approaching the AI in terms of informing specific processes, defining what an AI application is meant to accomplish, comparing and contrasting different options for AI technologies, understanding and choosing between data sources for use with the AI, and grounding use of AI in specific contexts where it's applied. So I was kind of thinking of an analogy, I guess, for this. And in some respects, it's kind of like producing a brand new hammer. And you give somebody a brand new hammer and tell them to use it to undo a screw. Yeah. So it's kind of, well, I think with artificial intelligence, you can make that kind of leap and think, that's got to be sensible. So it's a reality check of setting up a task. So when we talked about medical, a lot of that is compare and contrast, if you like, by a computer. So it looks at a lot of data from medical sort of evidence and will compare it to see if there are patterns within that, and then to look at the patterns and see, relative to the whole study, how relevant it is and score that relevance. So it is really sort of, okay, so here's your hammer. How useful is it for operating a screw? Well, you could try this and you could try that, and then you could look at the results and say, well, actually, it's very low results, so maybe this is not the correct tool. So maybe then what we should do is to identify our task of unscrewing a screw and say, well, what do we need? Well, we need to identify the kind of slot in the top of the screw. And you know, there's a range of those. So you then say, well, okay, could I actually put this now into a stick and produce a screwdriver? Well, yes, you could. But you could also put that kind of a bit into an electrical tool and do it quicker and easier. But you've really got to set those parameters out for this artificial intelligence to go in and do simple computational things. So it's not something, a bit like science fiction films, you know, we're always asking the computer, oh, what happens if this alien craft comes near? Do I run away or do I stand and fight, or what are the options? And a lot of things, like we send out an artificial intelligence into space. So I think famously in Star Trek, they found this wonderful entity called V'ger. And if you look at that episode, eventually what comes out of it is that the Voyager probe that we sent off into space umpteen years ago has actually collected evidence and developed artificial intelligence and become an entity in its own right. So I think it's a great thing, and it's worth struggling a bit with this paper because it's not a lightweight sort of read. You've got to try and scope a huge area of development, but it does sort of help you to bring that down into this framework to see where you can use the artificial intelligence as a toolkit and use it to improve on what you do. And I think, again, thinking about how will that happen? And if you think about the Industrial Revolution, we developed steam power. And, you can take that from the early experiments where they realized that boiling a kettle of water and forcing it down a pipe, there was actually a lot of energy in the steam that came out. And then they thought, okay, how can we apply that and develop sort of basic steam engines? And then various engineers along the way came and studied the latest version of a steam engine and said, how can I actually improve that? What's being wasted? What's being used? What's being efficient? Which is the best way to approach it? And as you see that development by human beings applying their intellect to it, you look at the modern equivalent in artificial intelligence. And then you can look at some of the steam engines that didn't come off as good working sort of uses. So it's an interesting thing. I think part of it is getting a handle on artificial intelligence, which is a brilliant thing from this framework, is not to just look at the cliff, but to look at it and go, okay, where's a handhold? Where's a foothold? Where's a way to get to where I want to be? So that's what the framework can help you to do. And it's part of the government's new AI action plan, which is trying to set out the course, the handholds, the footholds that we can use for new growth and investment in artificial intelligence across the UK.
It's all very interesting. And I did notice earlier this week in the press that there's a new NHS trial. It's artificial intelligence, and they're going to use it for breast cancer screening. And they say it's a world leading trial to test how cutting edge AI tools can be used to catch breast cancer cases earlier. And they're looking to for 700,000 women to take part, to be recruited, and they're going to test. That's across the UK, but they're going to use 5 different artificial intelligence platforms. And they're going to be tested across 30 sites, and that's going to start in April this year. And they're going to see if that technology can speed up the diagnosis, as well as, interestingly, free up radiologists.
Yes.
So there's good in everything, isn't there? There's good and bad parts to every new development, if you like.
Well, absolutely. And I think what we've got to see, I mean, we've touched on it before, is you've got to see the value of data.
Oh, indeed.
So the NHS is being targeted by a lot of the pharma industries as being a fantastic resource in terms of data. And so they would like access to our sort of communal medical data to be able to feed it to artificial intelligence systems to come up with new products. So there's a real sort of nuts and bolts understanding for people. And I think we've talked about creativity and people where you can feed all the music that you want into a system and ask it to write the new Beatles song or whoever your favourite artist is. And there have been different things. I mean, to say in the Beatles, they did actually use artificial intelligence in creating the track where they cleaned up John Lennon's vocals, and they released it last year as a single.
Indeed.
So their latest sound, and I think Paul McCartney, who sort of spoke about it, said he'd heard an artificial intelligence created track purporting to be him. But he said he could tell the difference. And
well, you would hope so, wouldn't you?
it depends on people being sort of selective as to whether they can as well. So,
yeah, but it's an interesting... That's a commercial use, isn't it? But I just think the real key to data with the you know, stuff that the NHS is looking at doing is trying to improve health, isn't it, of people, and capturing, you know, like prostate cancer, trying to use tools that'll help detect the genetics in somebody rather than, you know, sending them down for tests and stuff. Maybe there's something, you know, in the DNA.
There are real wins to be had, but I say this thing with the framework is understanding that you have to feed the beast data.
Well, garbage in, garbage out, as they used to say.
Absolutely. So, you know, it also says how you can look at whether whatever's being produced is garbage. And say, if you follow the link to the actual published paper, it does go at some depth, but you need to put some quiet time aside to sit and read it through and actually use your own intelligence to try and work through the impact.
So that's your job for this weekend then. Brilliant, Paul. Well,
I've got a parting shot just for Ogu, which was in the iPaper. And I know it's something he's spoken about before, but a warning that burning candles on your birthday cake can impair your brain.
Oh, I say, particulate matter, no doubt.
PM 2.5.
Yes.
So it says the recommendation is make sure that you're in a well-ventilated room if you're going to bring in a big birthday cake.
What are you trying to say, Paul? We're too old. Yeah, about right. Brilliant stuff, Paul. Great stuff. We'll speak to you Monday, Glory Days Rock Show, 1 until 3. Bye-bye, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
beautiful track there. A bit of Radiohead with Paranoid Android. And we were talking about that because RPG was talking about artificial intelligence. And on that note, the NHS is due to start a new breast cancer screening trial based around AI. Amazing stuff. If you're just tuning in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every week from 11 until 12. Our guest speaker this week is Dr. Ogo Osamor. Good morning, Ogo.
Good morning, Julie. How are you doing today?
We're doing very well, Ogo. Thank you for joining us on this rather grey Saturday morning.
I know.
It's a bit miserable.
It's true.
So, go on. For people who don't know who you are, Ogo, you're an ex-colleague of mine, but also a friend, and your background is air quality.
That's correct.
And you're also a chemist as well.
That's correct.
I know, a man of many talents. So today you're going to talk about, there was a report last year, at the end of last year, or actually early this year probably, from a publication called Carbon Brief, which is something I'm pretty sure we used to get that publication at work.
Yes, I think we did.
Yeah, when we were allowed to buy such things or subscribe to such things. And they did some analysis, and it was titled UK's Electricity Was the Cleanest Ever in 2024. So you were going to sort of talk about what they've found.
Yeah. They do year-on-year analysis of UK energy usage. Because the policy already an international, worldwide policy related to climate change, related to carbon footprints and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Governments across the globe committed to reducing their carbon footprint, meaning that they reduce carbon, for example, fossil fuel, they reduce emissions to air from carbon dioxide, for example. And what they've done is to look at energy sources, electricity especially, generation in the UK in the past 10 years. And they found that over this period, electricity has become, was measured to be the cleanest in terms of generation in 2024 compared to what it was in 2014.
Yeah.
There's three main reasons, really. One of them is that coal as a source of electricity generation has been phased out completely in the UK.
Yeah, that's quite a big step, isn't it?
That's a big step. And as you know, coal is a massive fossil fuel, and coal generates a huge amount of carbon dioxide when it is burned. So that is a massive achievement. And then they're getting less than half electricity from burning fossil fuels.
Yeah.
So, and that's again compared to 10 years ago. So the other thing they've done as well is they found that renewable energy generation has more than doubled. Recall that when we talked about renewable energy generation, we looked at wind, we looked at solar, we looked at hydro. There's a little bit about biomass as well, as well as heat pump. Now, they are renewable because the sources of energy is continuous. In other words, wind always helps in the generation of electricity.
If it's blowing, Ogo, that's the problem, isn't it? As we've talked on previous shows, the wind and solar, to a certain degree, you've got to have it. It's got to be windy and it's got to be sunny, but that's not so important.
Yeah. So they basically, found that renewable generation has more than doubled, over the past, 10 years.
Which is fast. I think that's quite fast transition.
Yeah, it is. Given that this country used to started with coal, some further they used to produce a lot of energy from coal and then moved to nuclear, moved to oil burning and so on. Gradually, things have improved to the extent that 2024 happened to be the cleanest year electricity was produced, from sources, basically. The other thing that's been happening is that electricity demand has been falling for nearly two decades as appliances have become, more efficient.
And oh, that's also interesting. Yeah.
Yes. And also the economy has shifted away from heavy industry because that used to be.
Isn't that? I didn't know that, Ogo, to be fair, because would think everybody's using more of everything.
I know, but you see, now things are a lot more efficient. Heavy industries have reduced hugely because they used to demand energy that was produced through burning of coal and so forth. So is those types of developments and, issues that have led to this massive improvement in the amount of energy being produced, being of lower carbon footprint. For example, the electricity that was generated in 2024 was associated with an average of, say, 124 grams of carbon dioxide compared with the carbon intensity of 419 grams. Now, these are difficult numbers. Well, they're not difficult, but they're numbers, that give detail to kilowatt-hour generation. So if it's reduced from 419 grams of carbon dioxide per kilowatt-hour in 2014 to 124 grams per kilowatt hour. That's a massive reduction.
Yeah, wow.
And, and all this because coal has been phased out, renewable sources have doubled. I'll share the numbers. For example, in terms of renewable sources of energy, it has doubled from 65 terawatt hours in 2014 to 43 terawatt hours in 2024, which is 122% improvement.
It's big. It's a big number, that, isn't it?
It is a big number. And it's the same as well with gas-fired power stations. They remain the largest source of energy at the moment, but hot on its heels is wind generation as well. In 2024, gas-powered stations produced about 28% of the electricity in this country, and they're just behind them, is the wind energy, which is 26%. But the prediction is that in 2025, wind generation will overtake gas power.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because the government, I think, the government's probably expecting wind to be the basic way of producing electricity as we move forward.
That is true, and they're gradually getting there. I think the thing to remember about gas-fired power stations is that gas itself is also a fossil fuel, but its carbon footprint is much lower than that of diesel, for example, or that of coal. So that's the difference. So every effort to reduce gas, you know, energy generation is positive. But it is coming through renewable energy sources, for example, through anaerobic digestion.
Is that biomass? Is that biomass or go?
Anaerobic digestion.
Or is that something different?
Anaerobic digestion is where organic matter, such as leaves and trees, decompose, and it produces what's called biogas.
Ah, yes.
Biogas contains approximately 60% methane, which is what gas really is, and about 40% carbon dioxide. Now, when you clean it up, you end up with methane. But that is, you know, it is renewable in the sense that it's vegetation, decomposed, decayed vegetation that produces it. Now, what is left of that decomposition process, which is which then is manure. That manure you can plow back in the fields to grow more vegetation.
Yeah.
Then you go back, you know, if you sort of recycle that vegetation again, you end up with anaerobic digestion to produce more of the same thing, i.e. more of a biogas, which where you get your methane from.
So that's a cleaner way of getting that methane.
It is a cleaner way of getting that methane. The other thing is, it's exactly the same thing. If you think about permafrost, you come across permafrost?
I've heard, yeah.
Okay, in the Russian area of massive gas, because underneath the permafrost, which is basically huge sheets of snow and ice, you know, compressing decayed biomaterial.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
And that's the decomposition that's taking place, the anaerobic digestion that's taking place underneath is where the gas is coming from.
Isn't that amazing? Now, I have heard of the term, definitely.
Yeah. Now, the fear, we hope it doesn't happen, but the fear is that if the permafrost collapses, there will be huge, you know, emissions.
Climate change. So if things start to thaw out, we've got a problem coming.
We've got serious problems.
We've got serious problems coming anyway with climate change. I'll go everywhere.
But, yeah, the progress has been made, you know, in this country in terms of shifting from heavy carbon dioxide generating sources to cleaner sources of energy generation. So there's a huge amount of improvement, and carbon dioxide reductions from these for example, the emissions associated with electricity supplies fell from 150 million tons of carbon dioxide.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, to 40 million tons. So there's been a 74% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions.
It sounds really positive. It's interesting when you said that electricity demand has gone down because things are more efficient, but it's also interesting they're saying they're expecting, looking to the future, that electricity demand is going to rise because transport is going to become increasingly electrified, you know, more electric vehicles, and then with heat pumps and all that sort of thing, we're going to go more and more towards electricity.
But the suggestion, from this report is that electric vehicle use is actually reducing the amount of carbon footprint compared to petrol use.
Yeah.
So even though we're moving towards more electricity, the sources of electricity generation is getting cleaner. The footprints associated with transport by shifting to electricity is getting better as well.
It is.
In terms of carbon footprint.
Which is amazing, so, isn't it?
Yes. So, you know, it's a win-win, really, in a way, when you think of it. Because if petrol, you know, is generating a lot of carbon footprints compared to electric vehicles, that's a good thing. Besides, the energy you use, you know, for recharging the electricity is probably coming from a renewable source as well.
Yeah.
I remember last time I had a conversation, the Germans were looking at paints.
On the cars,
to generate electricity. And there's another development which we could probably discuss another time, which some scientists in Zimbabwe has developed a hypersonic energy system from tapping energy, harnessing energy from radio waves.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, where did you find that article, Ogu?
Brilliant.
We'll talk about that next time. But isn't it amazing how creative people are?
Yes. And you see, for many people, they kind of think this is some joke, you know?
Until in a few years' time, it's the next big thing.
What I'm most impressed by is the science behind it.
Yeah.
Because basically the chap was saying, the guy who developed it was saying, look, ignore the voltage. It's very small amount of voltage is associated with radio wave energy, you know? Because radio wave in the spectrum of electromagnetic radiation is quite a weak wave. But having said so, this guy's managed to work out a way of harnessing the voltage associated with it and ramping it up to the point where it is possible to drive vehicles without a battery, without, you know, all this renewable stuff. It just comes from radio waves.
Isn't that amazing?
It's not. It's serious.
Yeah, well, you know, things from years back when people invented things and everybody went, oh, yeah, no, that'll never take off. And, you know, years down the line, we can't do without it. Fantastic stuff, Ogo. We'll have to let you go because we've got the film showing after us.
Right.
So,
okay, I hope that was
fantastic. Yeah, very interesting. Yes. Very interesting indeed, Ogo, as always.
Thank you.
And have a good
week. Julie, say hello to Paul and your crew.
I will. Bye-bye, Ogo. Thank you. Have a good weekend, Ogo. Bye.
Bye-bye.